Arcadia. It is Saturday, December 13th, and I am Chris Marcus here with you today as your host of Radio Arcadia. And the good news is we have a fun topic to tackle, and that's our U.S. lawmakers agreeing on a $1.1 trillion spending bill, which fortunately the measure would fund most of the government through September and avert a shutdown. And today we're going to think about what this actually means. Like usual, the headlines, I don't know if one chooses to describe this as propaganda or just the way these things are phrased, but thinking about whether it's really a good thing or not that these bills are being passed, or even that the government is staying in business. And perhaps what sparked my need to comment on this is anytime I see a picture of Nancy Pelosi holding her weekly news conference on Capitol Hill, and it looks like Nancy's trying to block the House's spending bill. And, you know, it's amazing that the only way that they ever agree on these things is by ending up spending more money. This goes back to one of my all-time favorites, the debt ceiling debacle, shall we call it, which I think at this point they've just given up on. If you remember back in 2011, that was when the last time they actually made a show out of it, when you had the Tea Party trying to prevent the debt ceiling from being raised under the thinking that, well, the whole point of the debt ceiling was to control spending, and every time we reach it, rather than cutting any spending, it just gets raised. And I know a lot of people didn't like the Tea Party was doing that, but, you know, I also don't like that I didn't have $40 million dropped off in my crib at birth, and these are some of the realities of the world that, yeah, nobody likes it now. And it's not popular when someone says, hey, we're borrowing and printing money that can never be repaid. Yeah, the government has to stop spending. And especially when you think about what they've been spending it on. Also in the news this week, it looks like the CIA is, they just released a report on some of the things the CIA has been up to. And not veering too far off topic, it's some not so nice stuff. And for example, while CIA Director John Brennan acknowledged that the officers had used abhorrent interrogation techniques on detainees and more, but forcefully challenged the conclusions of a Senate Democrat report that accused the CIA of deception and duplicity. I wonder if he means unlike any of the coups or governments they've overthrown or spying programs they're running on their own citizens. You could write a book about it. And actually, that is going to be my next upcoming book. We're still finishing The Emperor is Really Naked, which you can find out about on www.arcadiaeconomics.com, of explaining what I witnessed going through this Wall Street system firsthand. And certainly then when we think about what the CIA is doing, what all of these agencies that just make life more difficult on business are doing, certainly for those of you, especially if you've traveled abroad. And I found when I lived abroad for a year, that experience of seeing what foreigners really think about Americans, about the American government, because it's not always the same. Fortunately, because when you think about a lot of these stereotypes that are thrown around, well, the Americans don't like these guys, or the Persians don't like them, or the Jews don't like these, and you think, well, why would anybody say that? Because, well, they went to war against... Yeah, I don't know any people who generally feel this way. In my experience, it's usually government politicians that don't like the Iranians, or the government politicians that don't like the Americans, or that launch all these wars. And fortunately, I find that most people outside of government who lead their lives with honesty and integrity, generally what they like is doing some sort of job or having some sort of purpose that creates income, but they feel like they're contributing and making their community better and providing for their family and being able to go on vacation and have stuff. Everybody likes having stuff. Everybody likes having more stuff than less stuff. Well, maybe not everybody, but... And that's... I remember being in Greece, especially where you could still feel that pain and frustration after getting the Goldman Sachs treatment a couple of years ago. And, you know, but it's like you realize that everywhere it's just people are... They're people. Whether they look a little different or sound different, they're all humans, which... Also makes me question this idea of borders and passports, which is another one of those economic myths that I don't know if this is stealing jobs or everything I've ever seen in an economy. You have the best people in the best places, everyone utilizing their strengths, and you get government out of the way. When you think about it, the world actually probably could run on the concept of free at this point. When you think of if we hadn't had the government subverting Nikola Tesla's free energy or the banks that caused the housing bubble somehow going bust, getting bailed out with taxpayer and printed money, and then ending up with all the houses on top of it. And I remember one of those 60 Minutes reports a couple of years ago where they showed how Congress wasn't required to follow the same insider trading laws as other people. And you had people like Pelosi who had the ability to... I remember one of the examples they talked to about was regarding the credit cards. And here it was, these guys were trading while knowing a couple of weeks later they were going to set policy that was going to have a $1 billion impact on the market. I mean, yeah, I wish I could have done that when I was still trading. That would have been a lot easier. All right, I'm going to – all right, how would that work? Let's buy some bank stocks. Oh, let's call my friends at the Fed and have them print more money and push up all the bank stocks. Oh, that's a great setup. And let's make sure that we can – the one thing Republicans and Democrats can agree on is to spend more money. And I'm sure they will – they won't – see, I would love to have the government shut down. And in fact, can you please write in to chris@arcadiaeconomics.com if you can think of an example, like what has the government made better? What have they fixed? Instead, it's just story after story, bank, government, crime, incompetence, theft, stealing. We always hear the stories, even people who still believe in these mystical characters like Obama and Pelosi and still sit around and watch them fight around like an old married couple. Does that seem like that could be conducive to a financial fiduciary arrangement? Yet here it is, the biggest scale, the biggest purse strings in the history of the world. And that's how it's being run. So at some point there's a cost. Now the reason that it continues to go on, and this is my personal opinion, is that I find these things usually end when the money is not there anymore. And based on what I've seen, where I don't know what else you could expect to happen at this point outside of a werewolf or Bigfoot running out of the White House, I don't know what other shockers we could have or what data there could be. I mean, it's all pretty much out there for anyone who chooses to look, but it's really more a matter of perception and the view of the world you choose to take than anything else. Now, back leading up to the housing crisis, I was still drunk from Wharton Business School, where I had teachers like Jeremy Siegel, who maybe he took one of Bernanke's classes at Princeton, but in either case, was teaching the print 'em up Federal Reserve methodology. And, of course, it made it harder to see what was happening. Yet, post-crisis, then I saw how so many of these things seemed so obvious, started looking at the other side of the story, the Austrian free market economists, like Schiff, Doug Casey, Jim Rogers, who saw this coming miles away, who've seen the next one coming miles away, and who have also developed the discipline to understand that that's the challenge with a bubble. You don't know when it will burst, only that it will. That's the same skill set that I learned while I was a market maker and working on the New York Stock Exchange and trading equity options, where you adjust to the situation. Sometimes there's a lot of edge. Sometimes you're passing for a while. The same in poker, or you hear the baseball references. You take what you hit the ball where it's pitched. You know, you adjust to the conditions. If the pitch is really outside and you're trying to pull it, you're not going with the flow and accepting the parameters of the game. And we may not like the parameters of the game. Other times, it's we don't like the parameters of the game of life. And things don't go according to what we think is fair, or what we want, or what Congress, Nancy Pelosi, Barack Obama, the House of Rothschilds, or anybody else should or shouldn't be doing. What we can do, though, is understand very clearly what is being done. There's a degree to which there are things that we can know and prove, and sometimes we have to go on instinct and use our feel and put the clues together. You're not always going to have the smoking gun. And I remember one of the pieces of advice I got early on in my trading career from one of the senior traders, a really sharp guy named Vin. And Vin told me about how if you're winning on more than 52% of your trades, then you're trading too cautiously. Now, maybe those numbers are a little more extreme for a high-frequency trading setting, but still the point being that if you're only ever doing anything when it looks like it's such a surefire 100% guarantee, I don't know that that's how we were meant to live life. I think part of it is that you have to test certain things and you ask out more than one person in your life on a date. You know, some say yes, some say no. But going through the process, you also learn and see the way people respond. And this is how we grow as people and understand how to read different clues. Sometimes you have to understand when someone's lying. That's how investing works. There were no sympathy. I mean, maybe you did get a sympathy card if you were an Enron investor. I don't know if that got you your money back. In fact, one of the things from the trading standpoint that helped me learn this lesson quickly, sometimes before a takeover was announced, let's say a stock's trading at $16 and it's about to get taken over for $25, you see a big price spike in the price. Certainly if you're trading equity options, and you know about something before it's announced and you trade on it, well, that's insider trading and or front running or probably a variety of different crimes technically. But the thing is that from the market maker standpoint, if you're on the receiving end, if you're the one who's getting picked off, who that guy is buying it from, because there has to be a counterparty, it's not fair. It's not right. It can be incredibly frustrating and you can lose a lot of money. But that's part of the game. I don't like that that's part of the game. I wish it weren't part of the game. And I think a lot of the forced government regulation as opposed to allowing free market regulation, and which is a point where a lot of people often think, well, if we don't have the government to regulate things, is everything just going to go to hell? Which isn't the case. It's just, for example, right now we have the SEC regulating things but doing a very poor job of it. And yet, whether you choose to do your own regulation or hire an independent agency, you don't have that choice. You're stuck paying for the SEC. Yes, the agency that knew about Bernie Madoff years in advance. And unfortunately, due to these spending bills, we're stuck with some of these government plans for now. And however, this latest debate over how much of our money they're going to spend on things that are just going to be used to control us more and more. But what I find exciting and really what is the takeaway and what we can do about this is continuing to share what we're learning with other people. Share this podcast with people that you know who aren't seeing these issues or are still wondering why the same problems keep popping up. Because remember, at the end of the day, there's a lot of us and just a little of them. And from the investments and understanding that we can help ourselves on a personal level, but when we think about how can we help this world around us, really sharing the knowledge with your neighbor, go to ArcadiaEconomics.com and get on our mailing list where we're keeping people updated with this each week, and hit the subscribe button on the podcast so that you can stay informed about these things before they happen and share this information with those around you, because I do believe that when enough, just imagine if everybody knew what you knew, it would fall apart tomorrow and allow the opportunity to rebuild something sustainable based on freedom and all these ideals that we were sold and pledged allegiance to the flag of the United States of America that could be brought back again. And with that said, I hope this gave you a few ideas to think about in that journey. And I hope you're having a beautiful day and feeling free wherever you are. And God bless you all.